Hundreds of times a year, crowds large or small gather at local libraries to hear speakers give presentations on something entertaining or educational or important. Like this event last May at the Kansas City Public Library's Plaza Branch.
All right. Hi. Welcome. This is truly exciting. When you look at an overflow crowd for the inaugural event of our Truman and Israel lecture series, it couldn't be more thrilling.
The speaker that night was former Ambassador Dennis Ross. At one point, well into the event, he was talking about what he saw as the unique place of Israel in the Middle East.
You want to know the hallmark of democracy? The loser accepts the outcome. You know, you have one state in this region that has freedom of speech, freedom of assembly, freedom of the press, where everything is debated.
As it turned out, the enduring conversation about that evening's event would be about freedom of speech, but not in the Middle East, rather at the library. Welcome to KCUR Central Standard. I'm Brian Ellison, and we're talking today about libraries as places for civic conversation and civil discourse. And what happened that night in May is what's prompted the conversation. Before we go any further, let's listen to what happened after Ross finished his speech and began taking questions from the audience. This audio was provided by the library.
I think there are mics. You can come up to the mics.
Hi. Okay. Thank you. I'm very interested in the issue of tribalism and terror. Just today, I ran into an article referencing Truman's daughter Margaret's book, disclosing that the Stern gang sent mail bombs to Truman in 47. And we know that when I can't remember which group blew up the King David Hotel, but Jews were amongst the dead involved in that necessary statecraft, what ultimately became that. So you see this long history of not only the United States, but Israel utilizing terrorism that includes potentially the death of its own tribe to advance its own geopolitical cause, all the way up into the 21st century, including September 11th and that whole mess that I would tell people to look at Alan Sobrowski, the Jewish courageous Marine who's exposed the Zionist role in that. So I would ask you, at what point does the Jewish diaspora, do we have to have the ethical courage, I'm a Jewish American, to point out that, especially in America, both the countries that operate in our name have used terrorism way too long, including against its own citizens, to project power at home and abroad. When are we going to stand up and be ethical Jews and Americans?
Well, look, I don't think that as a matter of policy that the United States or Israel engage in acts of terror. You know, terror is you target deliberately civilians for an express political purpose. You know, the idea that Israel had something to do with 9/11 is just outrageous. They had nothing to do with it.
Tell that to the Marine. Tell that to the Marine, Alan Sobrowski. Look him up. Jewish American Marine.
You know what? You can make up whatever you want to. I'm a big believer, as Daniel Patrick Moynihan used to say, everybody's entitled to their own opinions. They're just not entitled to their own facts. So,
well, look at September.
Okay, you know what? I will accept the question, and we can ignore that.
As you said, a lie that's not challenged can become the truth.
That's what people heard that night at the Plaza Branch of the Kansas City Public Library when a man questioned Ambassador Ross. What happened next seems to be a subject of some conversation, but the man was detained and a library employee tried to intervene. By the end, both men were under arrest and have now been charged. Crosby Kemper, director of the Kansas City Public Library, is here with us this morning. Welcome back, Crosby.
Brian, nice to see you.
Good to see you. I know you weren't there that night, is that right?
Not until I was called to go down and bail Steve Wolfolk, our librarian, out of jail.
And so is that was the first you heard about all of this?
Yeah, well, I was called by Kerry Coogan, our director of public affairs, to explain what had happened. And I went to bail Steve out. And as it turns out, we helped Jeremy Roth Kushel, the questioner, get bailed out of jail as well.
So as you understand it from what you heard then, what happened at once they escorted Jeremy out?
There are videos and there's audio and lots and lots and lots of witnesses. As Irv Belzer introduced the ambassador, pointed out, there were a lot of people there, over 500 people, including a lot of people in the front row who saw exactly what happened, and then people as they walked back through the green room and into the hall where the arrest took place. Jeremy was asking his question, and I think a lot of us would disagree with the ambassador and disagree with Jeremy about the facts of Israel and the United States' policies. But he was in the process of asking a follow-up question when an off-duty police officer put his hands on him and tried to move him out.
Now, what were the police officers doing there?
So the background of this, which everyone needs to understand, it's one reason that we've tried to resolve this. This happened on May 9th. It's October 3rd. We're still trying to resolve this with the least amount of damage to everyone. is that this is a year, this happened a year after the Jewish Community Center shootings. This is put on as a joint event by the library, the Truman Presidential Library, and the Jewish Community Foundation. Jewish Community Foundation was worried about security, understandably. So they hired their security officer, their head of security, hired off-duty policemen to be their security for the night, to be our security for the night, which we'd all agreed to, and they overreacted. We've had hundreds of these events over the years, maybe thousands of these events. We've had much more raucous disputation. No one has ever had to put their hands on a questioner.
When you say the police overreacted, why do you think they reacted that way?
That's a good question. I can't really answer the question. It was getting into a more less of a question and answer session and more into an argument between Jeremy and the ambassador. And the ambassador was – everybody was being civil. You can hear in what you just played that Jeremy's perfectly civil up to the moment the police officer puts his hands on him.
Did the police have instructions to make sure there were no arguments?
So what – we had a conversation with Alex Burden of the Truman Presidential Library, who then had a conversation with I think either the head of security or the head of the Jewish Community Foundation about our conducting the question and answer session. That message apparently never quite got through. I don't know what instructions the head of security gave to the off-duty police officer. He was confused because you can hear him in the tape saying more than once that it's private property and a private event. It's a public library, pretty obviously, and it was a very large public event. So,
but you don't know if the police was acting on his own. The police officer was acting on his own initiative, or if someone instructed him.
In the video, you can see the head of security for the Jewish Community Foundation, Mr. Hawkins, come out behind Ambassador Ross, and he gives a signal that, among other things, led us to cut off the microphone, so to begin getting Jeremy to sit down, and then it's right at that moment that the police officer intervenes.
So that signal came from the head of security for the Jewish Community.
I don't know exactly. We've never talked directly to him, so I don't know exactly, or the officer. And for a long time we didn't even know what they were going to charge Steve with, so we kept hoping all along the way that the silliness of arresting a questioner who was being civil, stopping him in a public event at a public library, and then arresting the librarian who's trying to intervene to explain that to the officer. And, you can essentially, I think he just lost it, because you can hear the police officer screaming as they're trying to get Jeremy out of the hall that it's a private event. And then they go back into the backstage area and then into the hall from there. And they throw Steve against a pillar, throw him down on the ground, and arrest him. And it's not clear why they're at no point is it clear why they would arrest somebody in this situation.
Steve is your colleague, your employee.
He's our librarian
at the library. What is Steve being charged with?
interfering with an arrest.
And
it wasn't
clear
that there was an arrest going on until the very, very end, and they handcuff everybody.
Why do you think the prosecutors are going ahead with this case?
I have no clue. I mean, I think this story is now going national, and it's, you know, it's portrayed correctly as a defense of the First Amendment. We have problems in our communities generally of police overreaction, police training, and this is a simple one. I mean, this is a question. This is not. There's no threatening behavior here. No threatening behavior. So it's unclear to me, Brian, why the city attorney, why the prosecutor, why the police department. I called Daryl Forte, with whom the library has a very good relationship. We have a very good relationship with the police department. I just assumed that they would want this to go away. So I can't answer that question. It's a mystery.
And what can you tell us what Police Chief Daryl Forte said to you?
He said, file a complaint. I mean, we haven't really had a conversation with them, you know, or with the prosecutors.
Do you have any sense, Crosby, of why this is coming up now after 6 months, 5 months?
Yeah. Jeremy decided to talk to a First Amendment group, a national First Amendment group, and they posted a story. So at that point, we'd never even done an outline of this or a, you know, press release about it or anything, because we hoped it would be resolved before now. And so once he did that and we started to get calls from, like, the Library Journal, you'll have someone from the Library Journal on in a minute, we had to put out a statement that led to an article in the Star that led to your calling us,
yeah,
et cetera.
Well, I want to talk more about this, but I also want to note that the event at the Kansas City Public Library isn't the only one that's received some negative attention, including a difference of understanding between library officials and police. Also here today is Richie Moman, who is the Chief Customer Experience Officer at the Mid-Continent Public Library. Hi, Richie.
How are you?
Thanks for being here. What does the Chief Customer Experience Officer do?
I make sure that all customers have a good experience when they're coming into any of the Mid-Continent public libraries.
Okay, so one of those libraries is in Grandview, and back in August, apparently some at the library did not have a good experience with something that was a display that was there by the circulation desk. Can you tell us about that?
We had a display of books, and the book display was entitled Black Lives Matter, with the subtitle Books About the Black African-American Experience. And we had some objections from some of our off-duty security officers about the title. I want to make it clear that I don't feel that they had any objections to any of the material that was on this display table, but more so to the titles of the display.
So in your view, it wasn't that they didn't think people should have access to those books?
That is correct.
But they objected to the title. So what happened as a result of their objections?
One thing that they did was they voiced their concern to the branch manager. The branch manager sent the complaint up to our administration, and we looked at it as a team. And we tried to look at it in the sense of, are we delivering the correct message with the display? Again, as I want to stress, it wasn't the titles of the books, but more so the display. So is our marketing and our display titles correct? We didn't want to divert from the title versus diverting from the materials that were on the table.
So what came of this? Were they satisfied? What did the library do in response?
One thing that we did was we looked at the title of the display and we changed it a little bit to Books About Black Lives. That gave a little bit more perspective of the books. We still had two of the security officers that were not pleased with the change, and they in turn resigned from staff of Mid-Continent Public Library.
So these are police officers who do a part-time security work for you when
you're
off duty.
Yes.
What do you think of that?
I feel everybody has their own personal opinion. One of the reasons for the display is to bring the conversation to the table and bring the conversation into the library. Everybody has a different understanding and a different take of what material should be there, what conversations should be sparked from the library. And again, I can't give their perspective of what they felt as far as what we should be doing.
Do you feel like the library should have had to reconsider the display title? I mean, is that an infringement itself on sort of a free exchange of ideas?
As a library, we've never really had to talk about titles. We've always been in the business of defending the books. So this was something a little new for us is that title piece. But the purpose of it, we looked at it as, if we're not getting the correct message about the books, maybe we need to look at it to see if we can come to a compromise.
Did you have other response from the community? Were there folks who wanted the title to go back the other way?
No one responded of it going back the other way. I don't think anyone looked at it that serious of what the title should have been. No one has really focused on a title of a display, but more so the material that is related to it.
I want to ask both of you, Crosby Kemper and Richie Moen, you both serve libraries that operate in an environment where there's obviously a variety of viewpoints in the community. You're going to be addressing issues that people get worked up about. What is the responsibility of a library to be sensitive to that range of viewpoints in its community? Crosby?
You just expressed it. We should be sensitive to the range of viewpoints in the community. We should represent all the civilly expressed views in the community, and particularly on issues that are important to the community. That should be one of the library's roles. It's one I think in the Kansas City Public Library in particular we've been focused on. And I think most of our patrons, and there are a couple of million of them a year, are happy with that and think we do a pretty good job of representing many points of view.
But Richie, I mean, even if you represent this variety of points of view, some people are going to find some of those ideas objectionable. Do you have a responsibility to those who would object to seeing certain ideas or even certain words used at a library?
I think the library needs to stay neutral. We need to be a point where you can get all viewpoints. So again, even though that they may not agree with one viewpoint, we should have opposing viewpoints also to express that concern. So we should be a place that they can get any of the materials, no matter what their viewpoint is on the subject.
Is there a distinction that has real meaning between providing space for a variety of views and actually promoting those views?
Well, sure. If you're doing a display of books, and you know, we have this issue all the time. And we've sometimes made mistakes in doing it too. You need to understand that the patron will look at you as promoting something if it's one-sided in any way. And so, you know, we attempt to, and when we don't always succeed in being as pluralistic or as representative as maybe we could be, but I think most of the time we are, and I think we're always sensitive and we're always in dialogue with our patrons about the presentation of books. I will say that the political objections have been relatively rare in the library. The thing that we see regularly is people objecting to things that have to do with sex.
Mm-hmm. Richie, what was the response of other libraries in the Mid-Continent chain or in the area when this happened? Did they get involved?
We tried to keep everybody at bay of it because, again, we were looking at a title display. If it was the defending of the material, it would have been a different issue because the library tries to have representatives from all types of material in the system. So being that we're talking a title, it was more of an adjustment. It was a compromise. And as I mentioned, there were two that resigned, but there was also two members of the Grandview police officers that stayed with the library. So it wasn't a total us against them.
There's lots more to talk about this, but we're going to have to take a break. When we come back, KCUR Central Standard will ask what these two incidents say about the place of libraries in our society. Why should they or shouldn't they be places for controversy? And how does intellectual freedom happen in a time of such deepening ideological divides? I'm Brian Ellison. Stay tuned. This is KCUR's Central Standard. I'm Brian Ellison, in for Gina Kaufman. Libraries are places for learning, for research, for getting your homework done, and in a couple recent events, for controversy. Maybe that's how it's supposed to be, though. We're talking about the role of libraries today, and joining us now are Angel Tucker. She's Youth Services Manager for the Johnson County Library. Hi, Angel.
Good morning.
Nice to have you here. And also Meredith Schwartz. She's Executive Editor of the Library Journal, and she joins us from WNYC in New York City. Hi, Meredith.
Hi, Brian.
Thank you
so
much for being here. And I want to start with you, Meredith. The incident we've been talking about last spring at the Kansas City Public Library, where security removed and police arrested a participant in a community event, and where a library employee was arrested as he tried to intervene. How common is that sort of thing in libraries around the country?
That particular incident involving an arrest is very uncommon, but having debates over controversial issues and having them play out in the library is very common. In some ways, it speaks to the vitality of libraries that that's where people come to talk about the stuff they're real worked up over.
And so, is that a good thing? Is that where people should come to talk about things that they're agitated about?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that there's broad-based consensus in the library world that these conversations have to happen. The more contentious the topic, the more important it is to hear from people with other perspectives, and that libraries are uniquely positioned to convene those conversations because, as Richie said earlier, you know, we have all points of view. There's some examples of libraries that are actually really doubling down on hosting those conversations. Right there in Kansas, Topeka Shawnee, our Library of the Year, has been training their librarians to be community facilitators.
Huh. And why is that? I mean, what is it about a library that makes it a place where that kind of conversation should happen? I think you could just say a library is a place for storing books and documents. Why would controversy and issues exploration be something a library does?
Well, libraries are not just places to store books, but it's a place where people encounter ideas that are new to them, maybe that are disturbing to them. It's also a place that is used and trusted by a very wide cross-section of the community. These days, a lot of people live in what they call a filter bubble, where they mostly interact with people who share their opinions on social media, and because of narrow casting, where you no longer have to have everybody watching the same three networks, the library is this one of the few places left where all of those different strands meet, and where most people feel safe.
What kinds of topics have libraries recently had conversations about that have provoked backlash or controversy that you're aware of?
Well, usually the same topics that provoke backlash and controversy anywhere. People get very worked up about sex. They get very worked up about religion. They get very worked up about drugs, particularly if any of those things touch children or teens in any way. But there's also, I think, a lot of examples of libraries proactively tackling topics that are not causing controversy in the library, but they're causing controversy in the community. Seattle Public Library, for example, and Brooklyn Public Library are tackling gentrification in programming. That's not something that caused a problem at the library, but it's something that the community is talking about, and the library wants to get ahead of that.
Which sounds like the same thing that a public radio station or maybe a church or other groups that try to engage what's going on in the community would do. Is librarians sit back and say, what are people talking about? This is what we should be talking about.
Exactly, and sometimes in partnership with public radio stations or with churches and community centers.
So you heard about the incident here at the Mid-Continent Public Library with this display that initially was labeled Black Lives Matter. It makes me wonder about the place of libraries in broader movements, especially movements around social change or civil rights. Do libraries have a particular history with that kind of engagement?
Absolutely. The American Library Association even has its own social responsibility roundtable, which has been pushing for libraries to do more of that since at least the 60s. There's been multiple roles for libraries. There's roles of documenting what other people are doing in that movement. There's a project called DocNow that's really working on how to document what's going on social media about social justice in a real-time and respectful way. There's offering meeting space. There's offering community forums. And then some libraries are being more proactive. For example, Nashville Public Library holds trainings for police in its civil rights room to help them better understand the history of the civil rights movement. It depends on your community whether that's a thing that's useful.
And you say this really started in the 60s. Was that a new thing for libraries then?
I don't know that it was new. It was definitely stepped up and given that name, social responsibility. You know, I think the very first public library in America, Boston Public Library, was created with the goal of helping people become more informed voters, of redressing social inequalities, of helping new citizens become Americans. Those are social justice goals, even though they're so well accepted now that people don't necessarily think of them that way.
It makes it sound just a little bit like libraries maybe sometimes take sides.
So that's a debate in the profession. I believe it was Richie say earlier that we needed to stay neutral, and there's certainly a big strand of the profession that believes that that's exactly what libraries should be doing. But there are also people calling that out, saying that libraries were never neutral, that we have core values that drive our actions, and that the neutrality that people talk about is often just preserving the status quo, and that the status quo itself is not neutral. So I'm going to stay neutral and not take sides in that debate, but that debate is very vigorously going on in the profession right now.
Oh, very, very librarian-ish of you. don't go away, Meredith, but let me ask Angel Tucker. You work with youth at the Johnson County Library. Do these issues come up in your work?
You know, it's a frequent part of the work that I do. We currently work with two schools in Kansas City, one that's in Johnson County, one that's in Kansas City, Kansas, where we pull students together to talk about race in Kansas City and the historical framework at which we currently live in, real estate practicing, redlining, J.C. Nichols, and the things that occurred in this city that were picked up and pushed out into other cities. And having kids understand historically where they are and where we want to be is an important part of what the work that I do.
And as you do that, do you find yourself treading into what feels like dangerous territory sometimes with conversations?
I think it's important. When I hear the word neutrality, I lean towards diplomacy. And so I think as a librarian, it's my job to build conversations, facilitate them, let students take conversations where they need to go, not talk at them. And by making that my primary focus, diplomacy is always where I land.
I'm curious if the fact that you're having these conversations with young people changes the nature of this conversation. I mean, we're talking about neutrality, we're talking about controversial issues and broader social movements, but when you are entrusted with working with young people with these messages, does that change it?
Well, I think it's an important part of change. You know, if there's anything out there that we're afraid of, if there's anything out there that we don't know about, what's going to create better things is relationships. And so there's a lot of stake at hand when you work with young people, but it's important to build relationships. And I think they can serve as a place for others to look, adults, to learn that building relationships, understanding facts, sharing your opinions is an okay place to be.
So can you give me an example of sort of a particular program or two where you feel like in your work at the Johnson County Library, there's been maybe some pushback, but also some moving forward?
You know, interestingly, recently, we like to take young people on bus tours of Kansas City. And we were working with a very affluent school in the city. And I was on a bus with predominantly white students, predominantly male. And it was interesting to see how they perceived the tour, how they perceived their role in the tour, the conversations that they were having. And they were pushing back. The question is, does it matter that Kansas City is segregated? And I had a young student say that with sort of swag, for lack of better words, where he said, does it really matter? And in those moments, I have to respond with, well, does it matter to you? And that's the sort of thing that I try to do. Whenever something is pushed back upon us, we have to lean towards diplomacy. Don't respond. Ask another question. Get the person to keep thinking.
I'm wondering, too, the other dynamic about working with young people is that you aren't just dealing with them. You're dealing with a whole network around them, their parents, mm-hmm. maybe their teachers.
Well, their teachers. To me, as a librarian that serves the public, working with teachers has been extremely rewarding. We can support teachers who are with students 8 hours of the day, 5 days a week, and it's important to help support them in their efforts. And we come in as facilitators, and it creates space for them to be able to sit down with their students and also learn, also share their stories.
I'm curious what that student said to you, by the way, when you said, well, I don't know, does segregation matter to you?
Well, I think, well, he just looked at me, and then we made eye contact for, you know, 45 seconds. You know, I would hope that he left that bus going, let me think more about this.
Which I guess gets to the question of how much intellectual engagement are young people really looking to do through the library or maybe through anywhere else?
You know, I think that young people may not always know that they want it. In working with teachers and going into classrooms, we can build the framework for them. We do have at our Blue Valley branch a group of young people that meets monthly, and they're talking about really interesting topics, diversity in books. They're talking about what it means to face racism every single day. And so some people, depending on where they're at, who their parents are, where they go to school, I think young people are interested in having conversations that are intellectually stimulating.
Angel, I want to ask you, as well as you, Meredith Schwartz, from the Library Journal, in our first segment, we heard Crosby Kemper mention the First Amendment, mention this as an intellectual freedom issue, what happens at libraries and the idea of people being able to freely speak and not be arrested, not be challenged on that. Do you feel like this is an intellectual freedom issue, what's happening in libraries?
I think yes, absolutely. And you have to create spaces for people to be able to speak their mind. And what I find fascinating about any conversation that I've been a part of at the library, which is you can tell people, ask your question. Don't give any background. We only have so much time. And every single time, they're going to share a story, an experience, because people have to let you know where they are and who they are to ask their question properly.
Meredith, is this an intellectual freedom issue?
It absolutely is. I mean, this is the core of libraries, is that you be able to come with your questions, with your ideas, and find answers, find a million answers, not just one answer, and not be afraid. I also have to say, on a practical level, if anyone's ever heard of the Streisand effect, if you don't want people to hear about a question, don't make an intellectual freedom fuss over it, because now the whole country knows about this instead of just whoever was at that event.
Mm-hmm. And so there's intellectual freedom issues, but there's also just sort of practical good PR.
Yes, exactly.
We actually have a call, and I want to invite others to join us in the conversation. What do you think the library's role is in provoking thought, in influencing society, and in changing your mind? Has it done that for you? Call us at 816-235-2888. Maybe a library has offended you. Tell us about that, too. 816-235-2888. Give us a call. Let's talk to Dan, who's calling us from the Kansas side of the state line. Hello, Dan.
Hi, how are you doing?
Doing great.
Yes, well, I just wanted to say I've worked in libraries about 4 years. I worked as a reference paraprofessional currently. And going back to the idea of displays, it's absolutely true. Your callers are right. The library is a wealth of information for both sides, for all aspects. But libraries are also gatekeepers. We are the ones that help decide what gets put out, what's displayed, what might get put on the easel, and what might just get put on the shelf and all you see is the spine. So it's very important, in my opinion, for librarians to remember this, because, you know, it's easy for all of us to lose a little bit of objectivity in our day-to-day lives. And it's very important to, again, as gatekeepers, try to moderate, but very carefully, what material is being displayed, because it makes a very large difference of, you know, what is facing out, what is on display, and what gets put in the stacks themselves. So that's kind of just my aspect of it. I think that on the whole, librarians, again, we do this job because we enjoy informing, or at least making information available.
Sure. Dan, let me get a quick response here from Angel Tucker. Do you think that the point Dan is raising, which is that maybe the bias of the librarian can come into things, is that a risk?
You have to keep it at the forefront of your brain all the time, absolutely. And so when we were talking about the Black Lives Matter display, my question was, should it have read that? Is there, in our current climate, and what's going on in our country, would that entice some sort of negative reaction from someone who walks in the door? And if the answer is yes, then you call it something different. And I think that Crosby pointed out that we do make mistakes. We are human beings. We are trying to advocate for things constantly all day long. And so it's important to recognize that.
We're going to take a quick break. When KCUR Central Standard returns, we hear from you. Call us at 816-235-2888. About your take on the library's role in provoking thought and influencing society. Let us know how you think libraries have a role to play in civic discourse. I'm Brian Ellison. Stay with us. The library is not just for books, but if it's a place for ideas, what should that look like? Welcome back to KCUR Central Standard. We have all our guests around the table now. Crosby Kemper from the Kansas City Public Library, Richie Moman from Mid-Continent Public Library, Angel Tucker from the Johnson County Public Library, and also at the virtual table, Meredith Schwartz, the executive editor of Library Journal. You can be at the table with us, 816-235-2888 is the number to call to join the conversation about the role of libraries in promoting civic and civil discourse and how that can and should happen. Richie, I want to ask you kind of on a more personal level. You've answered as the library official that you are, but when you heard about this Black Lives Matter label on this display and about the reaction in the community to it, how did you react to that?
Well, let me first say that this happened on my first day working in Mid-Continent Public Library, so it was a new intake
Hello,
for me.
Hello, welcome to the job.
So what I had to first get a grasp on is, what were we trying to convey with the display? What information were we trying to give the customers or provide for the customers? So that provided a little bit more research for me to look and see whether we needed to adjust what we were doing.
Mm-hmm. And did it but as far as how it affected you personally, I mean, does it bother you when people respond negatively to ideas that maybe they are uncomfortable with or are different from their own?
Brian, I want to go back a little bit to say the libraries have always been in that uncomfortable role.
Yeah.
We've been doing book discussions many years ago. So therefore, it's nothing new for us to bring different parties to the table that have different viewpoints. So is it new? No. Not everyone is going to agree with me. Not everyone in this room is going to agree with my comments. But again, I try to be where I'm listening to them, hoping they're listening to me as well.
Crosby Kemper, you yourself are when you're not in your role as the director of the library, you yourself are an advocate for views that some people find unpopular.
I'm known to have a few opinions.
We've talked about those here on this program even. I guess my question is, how does this seem like a personal issue for you that there is an effort sometimes, it feels like, to restrain people's ideas?
Well, I'm a firm believer in the Constitution of the United States. That's a core value for me, and the First Amendment is a very important part. It's what Ambassador Ross talked about in his talk as well. That this is a universal value, and so defending that is important. And to defend that, you have to defend the right of all views. So, though I have some very strong opinions myself, I make sure that people with other opinions are in the library regularly, and that we have a strong debate over controversial topics.
Angel, I mean, I want to go back to something you said in the last segment, that you know you're working at the Johnson County Library, and you already shared a story of being on a bus tour with a group that was predominantly white. That may happen with some regularity at Johnson County Library events. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I would say that's fair.
So when you present issues of race, does it what's happening for you personally when you're having these conversations?
I think, you know, I always think back to being a 13-year-old living in Los Angeles during the Rodney King riots. And so I always know that at the core of who I am, I want this thing to be figured out. I want us to talk about race. I want us to talk about police brutality. I want people to say out loud how they feel so that they can then hear how someone else feels. And then maybe there can be some change. And so I know that that motivates me every single day. And the fact that I'm able to incorporate it into my job as a youth services manager is just an incredible blessing.
Meredith Schwartz, I do want to come back to the question of safety, which is in some ways where this conversation began in an incident where police got involved at the library. Is there a place for security, for safety in library events? I don't know that we have Meredith with us. Oh, there we go. Meredith, let's try again.
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. I'm sorry.
That's all right. So, yes, I mean, I think we have to be realistic that libraries are part of the world and security is a concern in a lot of places, particularly on issues that are strongly felt. But I think we also have to be very clear that physical safety and emotional safety from upsetting ideas are different. You know, that there's absolutely a place in the library to protect people's physical safety. And sometimes that means we have to bring in security experts. But we have to be careful also that they're well-trained to understand that discussing difficult issues with passion is not a threat to physical safety.
And Brian, could I say something
please,
about that?
Crosby.
You know, we've been doing this. I've been your librarian at Kansas City Public Library for now almost 12 years. We've done more public programming around public issues than any other library in the United States. I think I can say that without fear of contradiction. We've had very controversial people, Azir Nafizi talking about reading Lolita in Tehran, Garry Kasparov talking about the Russian opposition, et cetera, with very, very raucous debates going on. We have never, ever had to physically remove somebody from our space, ever. Kansas City is a pretty good place, actually, to have these conversations, as it turns out. And we have pretty civil audiences, including some of the people who disagree with our speakers. So I'd say it's not – security is, of course, an issue. We want people to feel that the library is a safe place. But I've got to tell you, the library is a safe place.
Mm-hmm.
We have only one example of this problem, and it was a unique example that was basically one or two overzealous people.
Well, it's interesting, too, though, to think of that. If it is unique and it's so unheard of, then that's the time for us to really sit down and talk out loud about what happened there. In my mind, missions collided. You know, if you think of the framework of the Jewish Community Center and what happened 2 years ago, and the idea of police officers being in a building and it's tense, our missions are different. Librarians want to facilitate conversations. Police officers are there to keep order. And so that's why I think it's important to say, where are the police officers in this conversation?
Do you think the police officers should have been there?
You know, I think if that was, yes, if that was as a community, if you build a program with a partner who says to you, we need this for our own safety, then you have to adhere to that.
And no one was objecting to the police officers being there. That we were perfectly happy to have the police officers there.
As long as they
didn't
get involved in the content of what was happening, in a dispute over whether someone should have been speaking.
You know, he was asking a question. Yeah. And you know, there's a moment at which, you know, it becomes an interruption of the flow of the event. And that was about to happen. And we turned off the microphone because it was time to do that. It was a question of the police officer putting his hands on Jeremy. It was a question of our librarian, Steve, intervening at that point. And he wasn't intervening. He wasn't putting his hands on the police officer. He was just saying, wait a minute. And the police officer overreacted. I mean, it's just a question of overreaction, and that this has gone on for 4-5 months now is one of those sort of inexplicable things. And it's partly because we're not talking. The prosecutor and the police have not sought to talk to us about this. We've sought to talk to them about it, but they don't want to talk about it. They've just gotten into a defensive mode.
And why do you think that is, Crosby?
Well, I think one reason is obvious, and that is the police are under a lot of pressure because of what's happened, the Black Lives Matter, the shootings of various unarmed African-American men. You know, that's a huge controversy, and the police are very defensive, and I get it. But this wasn't that situation. And it would be, I think, from a community point of view, we're in the midst of discussions that are completely separate from this with the police department, with Daryl Forte, discussions I've had with Daryl in a very civil way, about the library playing a larger role in the NOVA program, for instance, the community anti-violence programming.
Right.
And we certainly have, you know, we're talking about race here today. We have the conversation on race a lot in our programming. We're doing programs on the kind of things that we were talking about before with J.C. Nichols and the rules that he established and segregation that was a result of that. We're having conversation this month about the brown community and the black community, with the integration of the Swope Park swimming pool. We do this regularly, not just on African American History Month,
right.
And so that's a big part of our role, and we're trying to do that with the police department as well.
So I guess let me ask all of you and you as well, Meredith, what can a library do, practically speaking, to move this forward? Maybe we'll get away from Crosby here for a second to talk to the rest of you with the other librarians. I mean, what would you do to address this very issue if you were putting something together at your own library?
I would keep the conversation going, and I would also bring other partners to the table, again, with other viewpoints. Everyone brings something different to the table when they come to a conversation.
Yeah, when divergent views come together, things flourish, is what we think at the Johnson County Library. And I think it's important to set ground rules up front. I think of the Jesuits, when they held a conversation with Tanner Colby, the first thing that was put out there was, here are our rules for conversation. We listen more. If we disagree, we do so humbly. And so that was the framework that they set up. So their audience members knew, if you have questions, concerns, speak so in a way that can build on the conversation, not stop it.
Meredith, I'm curious, what's happened? We're talking a lot about race, and Kansas City has obviously had a number of conversations, as Crosby alluded to, and elements of Kansas City's history that provide plenty of fodder for library events. But other cities in recent months have been very much in the news with conflicts around race, around policing. How have the libraries in some of these other cities addressed that?
Well, most famously, the libraries in Ferguson and in Baltimore simply stayed open in during the course of civic unrest when other government agencies and businesses were closing. And simple as that is, that was very powerful. It was received as a gesture of trust by the community. It became a haven for people who didn't have many other safe and peaceful places to go. And other things grew out of that, not necessarily right at the first moment, but Ferguson hosted a exhibition of art in response to police shootings of unarmed African-American men, and they also organized some impromptu school events when the schools themselves were closed. But it really started with just being there and doing the core library job. One thing I did want to mention, I'm not a librarian, but when you said what else can we do, is invite the police into the conversation, not as guards but as participants, because it's clear that this conversation, while it's not only about policing, it definitely includes policing.
Yeah, that's obviously an important point to make. Let's take a call at 816-235-2888 from Joe in Kansas City, Missouri. Hello, Joe.
Good morning. Very good program. I'd just like to state that over at the Southeast Branch, a library in Kansas City, we have a little small group that meets the second and the fourth Thursday of each month. It's called Conversations in Black. We're very sort of proud of who our core group is. We have one member who's on the library board. We have one gentleman who has been a member of the college board, community college board, a teacher, public housing official, and we talk about topics that make the headlines in the Kansas City Globe, the Kansas City Star, and the Kansas City Call. And we have some white people, men, who come and express their opinions. And we have our ground rules to make sure that everybody gets an opportunity to say and express their opinion.
And Joe, what is it about the library that makes it a good place for that kind of conversation?
Well, at the Southeast Library, you got a crowd all the time. People sometimes waiting on get on a computer, and they have a youth program over there. And sometimes we meet at the same time the youth program is going on, but we have I had youngsters to come over and express their opinions on conversations, especially about the school and race and white people moving back into the city. But the library is a good location because you got a crowd of people there many times looking for to expand their knowledge of something. But it's always people there.
Yeah, I appreciate your letting us know about that event, Joe. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Are there other sort of that isn't a particular event with a speaker from outside? That's just an ongoing gathering. Is that representative?
That was Joe Lewis Maddox, who's a regular at the library, and in more ways than one. He's presented at the library. He's an amateur but very dedicated historian. He's a regular questioner. He's thought a lot about race. He's a long background in this, working for the city and other things. And he's a kind of ideal library patron because he spent a lot of his life in the library learning and now dispensing some of the things that he learns.
And his willingness to sort of be part of a regular event like that sort of points up the function of a library as sort of a meeting place in the community.
Right.
Do you think that the most effective way for libraries to be engaged is through putting on programs, or is it simply through sort of being present?
You've got to reflect the community, and you've got to inspire the community. It seems to me both things are true, and I do think you have to have a dedication to a higher mission, which I think most librarians do. Most of them probably think of themselves as social justice warriors that tend to be on the left, but also tend very much to value information becoming something a little higher, maybe knowledge.
Well, and to that point, then, Crosby, let me ask the rest of you: How do you avoid the library becoming a place where the ideas of the librarians are welcome, but not those that they're not choosing to promote? Is that a fair question,
sure.
Angel?
At Johnson County Library, we have a dedicated civic engagement librarian, and we have a dedicated mission to the work that. As a core, what do we want to do? She has a committee of people from various branches that come in and meet monthly, and together that group talks and determines what are we going to do for the year, what are we going to do, how are we going to respond to this issue, and then we take that to our colleagues and peers as well, and we get feedback. You have to understand, at a library, we all don't think the same. And so it's important to understand that, too, that librarians are even coming to the table with different views and viewpoints.
And that is where we will leave the conversation today. I want to say thank you to all of our guests, Crosby Kemper from the Kansas City Public Library, Richie Moman from the Mid-Continent Public Library, that was Angel Tucker from Johnson County Library, and Meredith Schwartz joined us from New York City from the Library Journal. Thank you, all of you, for being here today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You can find this program online. All of our recent shows are there, in fact. This one will be up later this afternoon. That's at kcur.org/centralstandard. We use Twitter to keep you up to speed on the show and on the topics we follow. We're at KCURCST, and I'm at PTS Brian, so follow us there. Tomorrow, what a garden can show us about writing. Tune in for that. KCUR Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton and Sylvia Maria Gross. Our team includes Suzanne Hogan, Jen Chen, and Andrea Tudhope, along with interns Raven Brooks and Aaron Pellish. Gina Kaufman will be back tomorrow. I'm Brian Ellison. Have a great day.